Hello and welcome to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week we three will be throwing a little extra butter on your movie experience. I am your host, Mark the Moose Haas, and as always, I am joined by the legendary JTE and the American icon himself, Benny Hamlin. Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing good. What's going on, Benny?
Nothing. I am thrilled beyond measure to be here and not dead.
Well, I'll second that one.
I guess I'll also third that one. This week, the House of Mouse is back at it again with their next live-action remake. And of course, they chose one of their most beloved animated movies, The Little Mermaid, which did gangbusters this weekend. This movie starring Halle Berry as Ariel, Javier Bardem as King Trident, Melissa McCarthy as the Sea Witch Ursula, had a huge domestic box office take, which is going to segue into our first topic of discussion, which is going to be this long weekend's, this holiday Memorial Day weekend's box office returns. So we had Little Mermaid, which did gangbusters, $117 million over this holiday weekend. Fast X came in second with 28.5. Guardians right on the heel in its fourth week took in another $25 million. Super Mario Brothers still chugging along. I said it twice because it's twice as good with $6 million. The Machine came out. I don't know who saw it. I'm hoping JTE did so he can enlighten us on that one. And About My Father, the recent Robert De Niro dramedy, came in with like $5.3 million over the weekend. So, gents, I threw out the box office returns. Let's get your take on this one. JTE, take the floor, buddy.
Yeah, you know, not a great weekend for the smaller films. The Machine, that Robert De Niro, Meet the Parents, but I'm Italian movie, didn't really do too well. And the Gerard Butler movie didn't really do well either. I think maybe those movies should be staying in the January, February, March kind of time frame. Those are movies you throw in, not in between the blockbusters, but before the blockbusters and after the blockbusters, where people are hungry to go to the movies. There's not a lot playing. I feel like those films could have done much better than in this. You know, you got Little Mermaid and Fast X. You're going to squeeze those movies in between that. There's just not enough real estate for those smaller films, especially in the world of streaming. All three of those movies felt like they could have went straight to streaming. The Gerard Butler movie could have went right to Amazon Prime. The De Niro one could have went to Netflix. And I think maybe I would have watched them this weekend. I didn't see any of them. The reviews weren't great on any of them either. So, you know, yeah. I'm definitely somebody who's going to, like, unless it's a real specific genre movie, even if it has bad reviews, sometimes I'll give it a shot because I'm like, I know that's my lane. But nothing that I read on those films made me like, I need to run out and see this. I did hang out with Jeff Snyder this weekend, and he did go see the Robert De Niro movie. What's it called again?
About My Father.
About My Father. And he said it was pretty good. He said he enjoyed it for the most part. He said really Robert De Niro is the main comedic element there, whereas Sebastian, who's, you know, this big comedian, and this is like his first film, he's kind of playing the straight man. And I think if you're going to be like, if this is your coming out party to like movie audiences and you're a comedian, why not take a more funny role? Like Ace Ventura came out. I mean, Jim Carrey came out with Ace Ventura. He's like, I'm going to showcase everything that I can when it comes to my comedy in my first film. And I think this guy should have done something. I'm not saying he should have done an Ace Ventura type movie, but something that fits a little bit more his fold. I saw the trailers. I'm like, this looks like Meet the Parents. And I'm like, I've seen De Niro do this before. There's a couple jokes in the trailer I thought was kind of funny, but overall, Mario is still kind of king. It's dominating overseas in the U.S. I can't say I'm surprised. I mean, it's just got a built-in audience for generations and generations. Little Mermaid did pretty well. I just feel like the days of like Beauty and the Beast and Lion King, where these movies were making billions, I think that time has kind of passed, and people are trying to catch on that these movies are, at the end of the day, just kind of a weak copycat of the movies that they grew up loving.
Don't sleep on De Niro as a comedic presence in movies, though. I mean, I'll stand by his performance and Analyze This and Analyze That. Like, he's the best part of those movies, frankly.
That's early De Niro. Like, when he works with good directors like Harold Ramis and, you know, Jay Roach, who did the Meet the Parent movies, I agree, he can be good, but he's done too many movies like Bad Grandpa or, you know, whatever that was called.
That's true.
I think that was a Jackass movie, was Bad Grandpa. He did some sort of grandpa movie. And he also did Showtime with Eddie Murphy, which was really bad. So I feel like he has to be matched with the right comedic director and talent for it to work. He's a great actor. You give him the right material, I think he could be really funny.
Now, I think this is very good news for the MCU that the Guardians 3 is holding so well after about four straight, you know, disappointing results. And I think it bodes really well for the Marvels, because I think if the Guardians had tanked like the other ones, I think the Marvels would have had a very hard road to hoe to, you know, be financially successful. Fast X, I'm not super surprised that it bottomed out. I think the goodwill with the franchise was used up with the Fast 9 being so awful. And so I think, you know, even though it was a fun movie to go and see in the theater, I don't think it's something people are going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go back out and spend another 3 hours with that bad boy next week. So I think it's going to keep dropping like a stone from this point. Everyone that's seen it is going to see it. And the Little Mermaid, you know, I think all the nostalgia crowd came out this week. So I am really interesting to see how it holds domestically. Like, you're going to sort of throw out some topics about how it's doing internationally, but I'm really interested to see if the audience enjoyed it enough that it'll hold next week once the initial nostalgia push is gone.
You're not wrong about the nostalgia push. I mean, hell, that's the reason why I went and saw it this weekend. You know, one of my earliest cinematic like memories going to the movies with my family was seeing The Little Mermaid as a kid. And it was not hard to talk my wife into going to see this movie because this was her first movie she can remember seeing as a child. So I agree 100% with you, Benny, that I think the nostalgia crowd has seen it. And we'll get into, you know, the spoilers of the movie down the line and our thoughts and impressions on that. I think it'll still have a little bit of legs because it's a Disney movie. It's a family movie. Parents are going to be retaking kids again to see it. But I do think the crowd like us, who this is probably only geared towards our nostalgic, you know, fibers, we're not going to go back and see that again. So I agree 100% with you. I think the success of Guardians, I also agree 100% with you, Benny. Marvel needed, the MCU needed a win. And hey, like Guardians 3, hate Guardians 3, it was enough of what felt like the first three phases worth of Marvel movies that it felt like you were once again sitting down in a Marvel movie. And Super Mario Brothers, I mean, I've seen Super Mario Brothers. You all have seen Super Mario Brothers. Like JT said, it appeals to every single crowd. And no kidding, Super Mario Brothers. Super Mario Brothers is going to continue to have legs. It's still going to continue to be in the top 10. It's going to be released like on streaming services the next like 3 weeks. It'll still have legs at the box office through the point of it being released on streaming services. Because it's not only appeals to everybody, it's also a fun movie. And I mean, hey, Chris Pratt's going to have $2 billion movies in 1 year. How about that? We probably couldn't have said that 2 years ago. But yeah, I agree. And yeah, The Machine, About My Father. Okay. Those who saw those movies have seen those movies. Those are just going to bottom out at the box office continuing. Any other thoughts, guys, before we go into our next topic?
Just for me, the Fast and Furious I was really curious about. Because I do agree, I felt like, you know, fatigue is just kind of setting in for this franchise. 9 did really well. In this one, the reviews weren't great. It felt like, at times felt like a parody of itself as you were watching part 10. Like, it's just, I don't know. I could feel the audience just kind of getting tired of it. I mean, when you start reaching 10, 11 films in a franchise, just and you're not really introducing anything super new, it's going to happen. It happens to the best of franchises, let alone number 10. So I'm real curious how this is going to affect number 11. I they're still making a good amount of money overseas, so the domestic is definitely taking a hit. But I think he has enough goodwill with Universal that they'll be like, all right, we'll finish it off with 11. We'll give you your regular $300-$400 budget. But this is probably going to be it for this series for a while until, according to Vin Diesel, he has like 3 or 4 spinoffs that he wants to do. I just don't know if anyone's interested in that either. But I am curious. Hopefully he knows going in this number 11 is going to be the big send-off, and he really just puts an end to it. I want to see closure with the family, the villains, and everyone, and I hope it just wraps up. Not neatly, but coherently would be nice.
Well, Benny, one of the things that Vin Diesel was saying over the weekend was that he was going to create a spinoff called The Toretto's, right? Because there hasn't been 10 movies, well, 8 movies about The Toretto's, right? Your thoughts on if Vin Diesel is going to be able to successfully run a spinoff of The Toretto's?
I'm sure someone will give him money to make one. And it will lose a lot of money for the person that gave him the money to make one. Outside of the Fast and Furious, maybe when the first Triple X came out, I don't know that there's been any Vin Diesel-led movies that have been a huge financial success. And you can see like the returns on the Fast and Furious one going down, and at least from my perspective, what people still like about the Fast and Furious is not the Toretto's, it's the insanity surrounding them. So if you take away what people still like, pump $80 million into it, and you're probably going to lose $40 million if you're a studio, but hey, it's your money. If you want to do it, more power to you.
That's about the exact way I feel too. I mean, he had the Pitch Black Riddick series, but I actually don't know if those were hugely profitable movies or if they just made enough to be able to garner a sequel. But those movies continue to dip in quality each sequel. And you kind of nailed it right on the head, Benny. I mean, outside of the Fast and the Furious, Vin Diesel doesn't really have any other platforms. So no shit, he's really trying to grasp onto the Toretto's as a spinoff, because that's it. That's what he's got. He's got the Fast and Furious. That clock is ticking on that franchise for sure. Well, JT, you mentioned it earlier, the international box office. And we're going to briefly talk about this because we really don't want to give the internet trolls their due justice. But domestically, The Little Mermaid made $117 million. Internationally, The Little Mermaid made $65 million, which is a huge, huge disappointing return on the international market for a live-action Disney remake. And a lot of signs are pointing to this being racially profiling, spamming the internet with bad reviews so that people are turned off from going and seeing it. It's really tragic because the casting in this movie is great. The movie itself, again, we'll talk about that later. We'll have our opinions on that. But the casting and the characters in this movie are great. And the themes that they have in this movie are awesome. But yet, once again, the internet rules, right? So I just kind of wanted to get your guys' perspective. JT, I'll start with you.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before the show. Like, I still have some hope for humanity. And when I read stuff like this, I think we get caught up in how much the internet actually matters in the real world and box office receipts. I think this is more of a case that people are just kind of getting tired of these Disney remakes. The world of cinema and movie going is different than it was before the pandemic, where Lion King and Beauty and the Beast were $1 billion, you know, hits for them. I think you can only pull the wool over somebody's eyes so many times before they start realizing what you're trying to do. And I feel like this is more of a, I think it's more of a case of, we're just like, nah, you know, these remakes, none of them are great. They're okay. They're a nice little shot of nostalgia, but we kind of are catching on to the fact that for the most part, these movies don't touch the originals, which we all grew up with. And I'd like to think that is more the reason why the box office is not showing up than a bunch of trolls online who are hitting the down button or the, you know, thumbs down button on these reviews and Rotten Tomatoes. I think a lot of times the internet gets all crazy and we read the internet all day and we're on social media and we think that's what's going on in the real world. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World premiered at Comic-Con to rave reviews. Everyone online was going crazy about that movie. And then it opened up the weekend it came out. It did very little money. It kind of did really bad, honestly. Hmm. And all of us movie people online were like, wow, the hype for that movie was so high. But yeah, but the hype was in this one little movie area on social media. It doesn't really reach out to middle America or people who aren't that invested into the kind of geek culture. So I think the fact there's a movie called Little Mermaid and it's a remake, it's going to guaranteed be a hit. I just think it's not going to make the money it used to make because I think people are catching on to what these remakes are, which to me, for the most part, are inferior renditions of an original film.
What's your thoughts, Benny?
I think the only concern is whether or not Disney believes that that's the reason it's not making money. Because whether you agree with it or you don't, Disney has, in their remakes, made a very conceited. Am I using the right word there? They've made a solid effort.
Calculated?
They've made a conscious decision to diversify the cast in them, which overall is a positive. But like when you see like the international box office receipts just bottoming out, if Disney as a business determines that that's why that's happening, then they have to make a conscious choice whether they're going to keep doing it or whether they're going to give in to this, you know, these perceived trolls to save money. Now, whether or not they believe that's why it's happening, whether or not they will give into it, if they do, I don't know. But I think the question is, why does Disney believe that it's happening?
Or do they? That's a good question. Do they believe it? I hope they have a couple of people there who are smarter than, I mean, like, I'm sure they have analytics as far as like where the social media is going and like exit reviews. You know, there's a cinema score for the movie when people are coming out. I'm hoping, you know, they're doing their homework and they're not just going off by some people online.
I mean, it's Disney. Disney, I think, is still running the world.
Yeah.
Secretly. And I mean, in the 12 chairs on the Illuminati, they have 10. But that's an excellent point, Benny. You're absolutely right. Disney did make a conscious effort to be able to diversify their casts, and they have been in these movies. And that's good on them. Or that's great on them. Whether, you know, internet trolls is the reason and why this movie is tanking, let's hope not. But if it is, still good on you, Disney, for diversifying. Our next topic, which second show, second tragic passing of someone there that we have to bring up, but the passing of Tina Turner. She wasn't the hugest movie star. However, her songs were predominantly featured in movies. She was in my opinion, the best of the Mad Max movies. She had a movie based on her life story, and had a brief little scene in Last Action Hero, but it is the sad passing of Tina Turner, 92 years old, still a very long life, for the hardest working woman in show business. So we definitely will be missing Tina Turner. Benny, you had mentioned before we started the show that you were a fan of some of her songs. What's your thoughts on the passing of Tina Turner?
I guess when someone gets into their 90s, it's somewhat always expected that they do not have that long left. But it's also always sad when talent leaves humanity. And she was a great talent. Like, my focus in music, like what I really enjoy, you know, Tina Turner didn't sing those genres, but her voice was so good. Like, even on my Spotify playlist, I have Private Dancer and You're the Best still in there that she sang, just because she was that talented that she was in a genre that I don't particularly listen to, but I still went over and grabbed stuff from her. After Mad Max, she was so great in Beyond Thunderdome. I'm really surprised that she never stuck with the acting, because that's still something that you consciously remember. Like, if you grew up in the 80s, that was an iconic villain, and that's, you know, she wasn't an actor, so she had so much talent. And just on a side note, like, Angela Bassett playing her in that biopic, is to this day one of the most spot-on castings in the history of cinema.
JT?
Yeah, like you said, you know, she didn't have a huge role when it goes to movie, you know, movie audiences. To me, Beyond Thunderdome is what I kind of mainly know her from. I know her as a singer, but I wasn't really somebody who listened to her music. But obviously, she had such a huge reach in the music industry. You could see her music in commercials, films, TV. So, like, of course, you're going to know who Tina Turner's music and you're going to know who she is. It's so funny you said Beyond Thunderdome is your favorite film. That's crazy to me. I would love to dissect that sometime. It's batshit crazy. And I agree with Benny. She is really good in it. She really brings a lot of flavor to that movie. And I'm surprised she didn't try to do some more acting. This is the weird thing. Her saxophone player name is Tim Capello. And he worked with her on many albums. And he's even featured in some of her music videos. But what I'll always know him as is the saxophone guy from the Lost Boys. Because like that's one of his only songs that he made without her. And it was like his hit single, I Still Believe. I love, for some reason, when I think of her, like I always think of Tim Capello in that scene in Lost Boys. Because he looks like Shawn Michaels. He's got like some sort of like bandanas on his arms. He's jacked and he's got a saxophone. Saxophone guy from Lost Boys. I don't know why this brought me to that, but that's what happens when you get into my brain. I just automatically go to the craziest movie thing I can think of. But yeah, she'll be missed. She's highly talented. You know, it's somebody like my mom used to listen to Tina Turner. Like, even though, you know, I was a very young kid when she was making music, she's always been somebody who, you know, you just know about. And then the film came out in the 90s. It's still, there's like gifs and memes from that movie of Angela Bassett, like setting the car on fire and walking away. So yeah, she'll be missed. She left her mark on this world and through music and, you know, movies and television. And if you could do that, that's great, man. You know, hopefully this podcast will live on after I die and people are listening to me the year 2035 or something. Oh God, 2035. I should still be alive. Oh, I might date myself there.
Whoa. Well, here's hoping JT. Yeah, there we go. That's a more realistic date. I mean, I told you guys this before we started the show, but fun fact about the outfit, the metal bikini that Tina Turner wore in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Tina Turner weighed 135 pounds during filming. That bikini weighed 120 pounds. So wow. The joke always was Tina Turner had the best legs in the business. It was probably because she was toting around 120 Good pounds Lord. On her. Yeah.
She also had a huge hair.
Huge hair. Well, Tina, you will be missed. And like JT said, you definitely made your mark on this world. And as to quote Benny, it is always sad when we lose talent. Our last topic in our first segment here is back to the House of Mouse and their new streaming service, Disney Plus. Now removing content from their streaming services, movies, shows like Willow that debuted this year, gone. Franchises like The Mighty Ducks with streaming shows that still exist in that universe, gone. Cheaper by the Dozen, The World According to Jeff Goldblum. That was like the first show on Disney Plus, gone. Even newer releases like Artemis Fowl, which was a Disney Plus geared movie, gone. We're not sure why. We know why. But for a service like Disney Plus, which is trying to contend in the world of streaming services, they're now dropping original content and content designed specifically for the show. Maybe there's just server problems and they just don't have enough storage on the Disney Plus server for these, but I'm very curious about your guys' thoughts. I'm going to start with JT because you've been a champion for the Willow series since it came out. Yeah. Now I'm a fan of the original Willow movie. What's your thoughts on what's happening here?
I just hate it. I mean, I'm a big physical media guy. I have maybe over 800 Blu-rays. I don't, you know, listen, if you're going to take these shows off your streaming platform, at least give us the option to buy it and put it in our collection. Or even if you could let me download it, you know, put it on iTunes to buy. just I hate the fact that they're taking away these shows that we invested our time in that are not just like, you know, original. These are spinoffs of huge IPs like the Mighty Ducks. Willow is a George Lucas, you know, produced, you know, property. And that I think Benny was saying before the show that they might sell some of these off to like Tubi and stuff. I don't want to have to go searching for these things or waiting for them to be landing on somewhere. I will probably end up buying a bootleg version off eBay. You could buy like good bootleg Blu-rays now. And it sucks that it comes to that, that I have to, you know, even make that an option. Cause you know, I want to support Willow. I want to support the people who made the show, but when you're Disney and you're taking these things away from us without any other avenue of watching it, it's just sad. My cousin, you know, we grew up watching Willow together and I had to call him and tell him, dude, have you got to watching Willow yet? He's like, no, I haven't. I can't wait. I'm like, you got like a day. I was like, you got 24 hours to binge that thing. They are taking it away. And listen, look how much content is on Netflix. You're telling me Disney doesn't have the room to keep these shows on? They're trying to save money. Is that what it is? You're Disney. You have more money than most. Apple maybe has more money than them, but Disney is one of the top money makers in the world. You're telling me you can't shell out whatever small amount of money it is to keep these shows on your streaming service, shows that you created strictly for the streaming service? I just think it's dumb. I think it's stupid. And I don't know what Disney's thinking. Again, it all comes down to money. If you want us to invest in your streaming service, don't take away the shows that we love and throw them out to other streaming services, because it breaks some of that trust that we have. Like, I got to go buy a bootleg Blu-ray now.
Benny, what do you think? Why do you think Disney's doing this?
I think it is a symptom of the death of the streaming wars. Like, I think all of these companies, for the most part, are finding out that there's not a giant windfall of money to be made in streaming services. Because you see multiple ones. HBO is doing this. You will see constantly like other ones starting to jettison things that are costing them monies that they have to pay royalties for. Just because people that you can't keep adding new subscribers. Like the people that are going to subscribe have subscribed. This is who you have. So you know now how much money that you're going to make from your subscriptions to a certain extent. So now you have to cut costs to where that's profitable. And all of them have been losing money to this point. There are no profitable streamers right now. So all of them are going to start jettisoning things and cutting costs to get under that. Because other than like certain international markets that, you know, maybe haven't fully bought into streaming yet, that's the only area for growth. Everyone in the U.S. that's going to stream is streaming. And I don't know what the profit margin is on a Blu-ray, but, you know, how many people are going to go and buy a Blu-ray to Willow when they could watch it for free on a streaming service they already had and did not? So I think you're going to continue to see this. And, you know, you'll see some reports that come out, like other things like Paramount have considered going like Sony's route. Where, you know, we're just going to license our content. We're not even going to stream it anymore. Because there's more money in that now, supplying these people who don't want to spend $6 billion to create new content. So I think you'll, over the next couple of years, you will see some of these streaming services drop out and go back to a pure content model. And you'll see the other ones start relying on the content from the other content creators and just cutting costs.
It is an interesting move on Disney Plus's end, because Disney Plus is still kind of a newer name in the streaming service game. And for them to drop a lot of their content and original content, I will defend the Willow series. I had a lot of fun with it. Yeah, there were a few episodes that seemed to drag a little bit, but for the most part, Willow was a property that I grew up with. I mean, everyone on here, we're all childs of the 80s. And that original Willow movie still holds in my book. And I can remember watching that movie as a kid with my dad. And there were a lot of like nostalgic moments in the Willow series. And we've talked about this a couple times now, how we just eat up nostalgia. And I do think that Disney, the Willow series, I think they were intending on getting a new younger crowd with the property that's 35 years old. And so it does make it a little tricky for newer audiences who have never seen the original Willow to be able to just simply pick up and know what a brownie is and, you know, see a Kevin Pollak cameo and go like, who the fuck is that? We're seeing that. We're like, oh my God, it's Kevin Pollak as a brownie. So I do think Willow right off the bat had an uphill battle, but it was a good show. It did the original source material justice. And by the end of it, it had introduced enough new content that it was an exciting, okay, I can't wait to see what happens next season. There's all new like lore in this world, but then now it's going away. And Disney Plus has had some great hits for them, right? The Star Wars content that's coming out of the Disney Plus streaming service is grade A material. And that's right there. I think what Disney's making their money off of is this Star Wars content. But this other content, like there has to be more to Disney Plus than just the Marvel shows and the Star Wars stuff. And what they're cutting right now is everything but their money makers. And so, again, you're seeing the business behind Disney take center stage, and they're making that decision that, you know what, this, and to your point, Benny, I mean, there may come a time when Disney Plus is just simply Marvel and Star Wars. They're going to cut out the National Geographic stuff. I mean, cutting shows like The World According to Jeff Goldblum, I mean, that kind of tied in like a reality show and like the National Geographic content kind of into one show, but we're not going to see the like Made by Jeremy Renner's, the Chris Hemsworth showing off his muscles show. You could have cut that one. I don't give a shit about that one, but all that makes me want to do when I watch Hemsworth is in a show like that is start a new diet. And that's the last thing I want to do. So
makes me want to order a pizza. It's like, fuck it. I'm never getting there.
But yeah, interesting move by Disney, but definitely you're seeing Disney as a business on display right now. They see what's not producing for them. They see what is producing from them. Hate to see it happen, but you also understand the reasoning behind it. So sad to see some of these shows go. Hopefully they do find another home. Hopefully Disney reevaluates the Willow series, maybe give it a little time to breathe. Maybe it gains a different fan base on another platform. And hopefully down the line, we'll get to see what the heck ends up happening to Tony Revioli's character. That's going to wrap it for our first segment. We are going to cut to a commercial break from our sponsors right now.
The Taco Bell Grande Meal Deal versus just another burger deal. No matter how you look at it, a burger deal's a burger deal. But a Grande Meal Deal is juicy. A Grande Meal Deal is cheesy. A Grande Meal Deal is tasty. A Grande Meal Deal is grande. You can get a burger deal any day. But the Grande Meal Deals with two entrees, a drink, and dessert are just $2.89 each for a short time at Taco Bell.
Sick and mad.
Tiger attack!
Take some Hedgehog Tonic and go bionic and give Dr. Robotnik a dose of his own medicine. Sonic 3D Blast, the handheld game. Batteries not included.
This is our favorite segment of every show that we do. And this is the extra butter that the three of us like to throw in there. Our own personal feelings about franchises, hidden gems, unknown movies, movies you know, movies you love, movies you hate, movies that we love. You may hate them, like the Expendables, but damn it, JTE loves them. We are going to discuss these Disney remakes, these live-action remakes of beloved properties. And Disney, at this point in time, is celebrating 100 years of Disney, right? So that means that we've got 100 years of content, potentially, to discuss. But really, maybe over the last 10 years is when Disney's starting to sink its teeth into these live-action remakes of these animated or non-animated properties, just remakes of some of their existing stuff. So we're going to start with JTE. And JTE, let's just kick us off, man. Tell us what your thoughts are on, one, the Disney remakes. Do you like them? Do you hate them? Two, what's your favorite of the Disney ones? Which ones are unnecessary? Tell us about the House of Mouse, buddy. Your feelings. Go.
Yeah, you know, we all grew up with these movies. And on paper, I understand why they're doing it. If I'm an executive at Disney and I'm like, I got five checks, They're all worth $1 billion. Should we cash them or just leave them in the drawer? You're going to cash those checks. Because, you know, like when you remake The Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid, you know people are going to show out for these things because there's so much goodwill and love for these classic films. Just curiosity is going to take you there. And I don't think they are all bad. I don't think any of them are excellent. They all are, for the most part, just fine. And I think one of the issues I have with these movies is because you're going in, it's not like you know the story. You know the beats. You know the plot. You know the twist. You know the turns. You know the music. And a lot of these remakes are like a good 40 to 45 or maybe more longer than the animated versions. And I think when I sit down to watch these movies, I say to myself, I know where everything's going. I know where all the big hits are going to have to hit. But it's taking an hour longer to get to there. And because of that, I'm just waiting for the next thing that I enjoy to happen. And because of that, these movies feel really drawn out to me. They feel really long. I would have liked it. Why not match at least close to the running time of these classic animated films? They hit, man. As soon as you're done with Under the Sea, before you know it, you're in, the next hit song. The next hit is coming so quickly. And while they bring new things to these live action remakes, I just don't know if any of those extra tidbits that they're adding in there, backstory, character development, are really necessary or really help to make the films any better. And at the end of the day, I just don't see anybody reaching for those remakes instead of the classic original films. The Aladdin is an interesting one. How do you replace Robin Williams with Will Smith? Now, don't get me wrong. Will Smith is very energetic. He's very, charismatic. But he's not going to bring you the style of comedy, pace, and frantic energy that Robin Williams is going to bring to that role. So, to me, it just feels like diminishing returns for the most part on all these films. But again, they're not like you're going – the money's on the screen. When I go see these remakes, they're not bad. They're just inferior versions of something that I think worked so specifically for that medium. Those movies were written, made, the songs were made – for animation. They were made to be in an animated film. And when you transfer it to live action, something is lost in that transfer. You're losing some sort of quality. And I don't quite know what it is after watching all these films, but I do feel like it's just certain stories are made for certain mediums. And when you try to transfer to another medium, it just doesn't always translate. I think the films overall, like I said, they're making money. They're billion-dollar makers. People are going to go see them out of just pure curiosity. But they feel a little bit creatively there's a creative element that feels like it's missing because it feels like a remake. It feels like an unnecessary remake at the end of the day. There are some of these movies I like, and I'll get into that, and I'll get into some of the films that I enjoy. Cruella, for instance, is not really a remake. It's a prequel. And it's like the beginning of... I actually like that movie. I think it's really well directed, and I think Emma Stone and the supporting cast is really well. But it's a new creative thing that we've never seen before, just put into that 101 Dalmatians world. And I'd much rather see something like that than just a copy, paint by numbers remake in a different skin, if that makes sense.
How about you, Benny? What's your thoughts on these Disney remakes, aside from cashing checks and snapping necks, which is what Disney does. What's your thoughts as a whole on the House of Mouse?
I think most of them are based on classic fairy tales. So, these are stories that have been selling across different mediums, whether it's children's books, novels, vaudeville, whatever. These stories have been selling for over a century. So I don't think there's anything preventing you from transferring them into a new medium. But I think one thing that they do is the people making the remakes of them, they are limiting in how far they can get away from that original. So just pick a random one, for example, like the Beauty and the Beast remake. I thought that was a fine movie. It's not something I'm going to, rewatch frequently, but I wasn't disappointed that I saw it. I enjoyed it. But that particular story, there are a lot of different ways that you could take that as a film to make it something really mind blowing. But the thing is, you're banking on the nostalgia. So they're not letting them get too far away from the original. But since they're not getting too far away from the original, there's not really a chance for greatness. It's like going to a baseball game knowing there's not going to be any home runs. It may be a good game, you know, but you know, it's like they built a giant wall in the outfield that says, there will be no home runs. We guarantee you that you're not going to leave here and weep and just be miserable, but there will be no home runs. We guarantee it. And I think that's what they're doing.
I like the analogy. It's like going to an NBA game, but there's going to be no dunking. Well, actually, that would just be a WNBA game. But anyway, I agree with what Benny says. Yeah, you're kind of going just knowing exactly what you're going to get, and there's not a whole lot of surprises. And the surprises that do come up, they're not always for the best. So yeah, I kind of agree with what Benny's saying. You're going in with your cap. Your ceiling can only be so high going into these movies. To me, what makes some of these movies more successful than others is actually the performances of some of the actors in the movies. I would probably say Beauty and the Beast is probably one of the better films of the remakes, because I thought Luke Evans brought so much character and charisma into his role, along with Josh Gad as his sidekick. Yes. Like, they were just so entertaining, and like to the point where I was like, oh man, they did a really good job of taking that character from the cartoon and making him live action and kind of giving him his own thing to do. And again, you need an actor like that who could bring that charisma and that kind of characterization. We're going to get into The Little Mermaid a little bit later, but there's some actors in that movie who I thought had no charisma and brought nothing to the role. So I think a lot of it comes down to, what are you going to do with the casting, and how are you going to bring some energy into these movies that you can only get from a human, you know, performance. You know, in animation, you have the voiceover and you can only do so much. But at the end of the day, what these movies can do is bring an actor's presence and charisma and make it an improvement in some ways. Now, Aladdin, Will Smith, yeah, he was fine as a genie, but you're just not going to top Robin Williams in my book, no matter live action or cartoon. So you're going in there with a little bit of a handicap already.
I definitely think, I mean, to both of your points, the struggle that Disney has with these live action remakes, and Benny, I think you nailed it, is the directors are only allowed to go so far. And so I think where the directors are taking their chances or these new innovative risks with these movies is through the casting. And to your point, JT, I mean, the changes in these movies really does come from the performances of these beloved characters that we've all grown up watching. I agree 100%. I mean, Beauty and the Beast, my favorite part of the movie was Luke Evans as Gaston.
Yeah.
And Josh Gad as LeFou. And why Luke Evans isn't in more things is criminal. That dude is great. And I hate that he doesn't, like, I hate that his last movie was like Murder Mystery 2 with Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy these Disney remakes. I do wish that there were a little more changes to the story. I won't spoil too much, but like watching The Little Mermaid Sunday night, I could literally, I leant over to my wife and said, okay, the next scene is going to be the kiss the girl scene. And it was. And so there are some very like beat by beat by beat by beat repeats from the originals into these remakes. Something like Cruella shook a character, and yes, it created an origin story, but even at the end with introducing the dogs, it was a different story. And so it stood out above some of these cookie cutter remakes. Cruella, I think, is my favorite of these like Disney Plus remakes. But then even like The Jungle Book, and I think The Jungle Book is such a charming freaking movie. At the end, Mowgli doesn't go to the man village. He stays with the animals. They are his new family. And so Jon Favreau took a risk there, and it paid off. And like, I think the Jungle Book, like, inventively is the most creative of these Disney remakes. I think that movie is so freaking charming. But then the House of Mouse, I truly believe this. Jon Favreau made the Jungle Book, his movie, and then Disney, and then he pitched Disney the Mandalorian series, and Disney said, we'll do it if you use the same technology that you just used to make the Jungle Book, but you make the Lion King. And then he was shackled, and the Lion King movie is beat for beat for beat the exact same movie. The voice talent in the Lion King is off the charts. I mean, Billy Eichner as Timon and Seth Rogen as Pumbaa, like, Queen Bee is Nala. Like, you can't get better casting in this movie, but that there was nothing inventive about the Lion King movie.
Lion King might be my least favorite movie of all these remakes. Yes. And it might be my favorite of the animated classics that we're talking about, and which is like crazy to me. Like, Beauty and the Beast, of course I like it, but I think that movie is probably one of the better ones, like I said, because of the performances. But Lion King is probably my favorite, you know, of those early 80s, 90s Disney films. And I saw the Jon Favreau film, and I just was bored to tears. Everything that I loved about the original was there, but it felt like a lesser version of. They sing that song, Can You Feel the Love Tonight? And it's not even nighttime. It was during the day. I was like, are they even listening to the lyrics? Can you feel love tonight? And it's daytime? What is happening right now? But I agree with you. Jon Favreau felt like, and Jungle Book is one where I could see a remake actually benefiting, because that is old, old school Disney. And that movie, the original, is tied together just by songs. There's not really a three-act structure to that film. It's kind of all over the place. And Jungle Book, it's like he took the skeleton of what he was supposed to with the Jungle Book and made his own film. And then Lion King was the complete opposite of that. It was a CGI remake of the original minus any creativity and anything that's as good as the original. They used James Earl Jones.
Yeah, they even used James Earl Jones as Mufasa.
Get Idris Elba or somebody. Do something different.
Well, Idris was Shere Khan.
That's true, tiger.
Yeah. Which, again, inspired casting, vocal talents for that movie. Do you guys remember the 90s live-action Jungle Book with the guy who played Liu Kang from Mortal Kombat? Was it like Rudyard
Kipling's? No, I don't think it was Liu. It wasn't Liu Kang. It was the Jason Lee from Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. Was it?
Okay. Yes. You might be right. Yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, I'm like 100% sure.
Isn't that the same guy who played Liu Kang from Mortal Kombat?
No, okay. That guy didn't really do anything outside. The only other thing that guy did was Beverly Hills Ninja. he played Chris Farley's brother in Beverly Hills Ninja.
That's right.
I don't know what else he'd done besides Mortal Kombat in that movie, but Jason Lee was in the live-action Jungle Book. That's a cool movie, man. Jason Lee was awesome in the 90s. I still love Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, and he played a good villain in Kurt Russell's Soldier, where they were basically like Universal Soldiers. But yeah, that's a good, you know, that's, again, I think Jungle Book is not one of these 80s, 90s classics that we're referring to. It was something so much older that it was in need of a remake. It was in need of a, you know, a better storytelling, a better script. I don't think you could say that about the films we're talking about, Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid, Lion King. I just don't think those movies needed improvement. They're classics for a reason.
How about you, Benny? What is your favorite of these Disney live-action remakes, or just even live-action Disney movies?
Well, if it's just live-action Disney movies, it's Remember the Titans, but that's not a remake of anything. So I would say that I think Beauty and the Beast was, like I said, it wasn't spectacular, but it was solid. We will get into The Little Mermaid. I did enjoy the movie quite a bit. As far as the remakes, I don't think there's any of them that I'm like, this is amazing. I think The Jungle Book has been the best of them so far. But what I'm really interested in seeing is, they have Lilo and Stitch and Hercules coming up in the near future. And those two movies are the most geared to be live action movies out of all the animated movies. In my opinion, they'll be the easiest to translate. And I think they will probably work better live action than they did animated, even though Hercules is my favorite Disney cartoon. And so I'm really interested in what they have coming up in the future. But so far, I think the Jungle Book has did it best. It had the most creative license. I think it was the most innovative, and it does feel the furthest away from the original than the other ones have. And so I think that's probably what I'm looking for. And I hope they have the guts to do that with Lilo and Stitch and Hercules, because Lilo and Stitch, that has a lot of dark subject matter. It's dealing with the foster care system. So I'm curious to see how much courage they put into that movie, because that could, both of those, I think, could be something special if done right.
Also, there's no musical numbers like these other films. You're waiting for that musical number. Lilo and Stitch doesn't have that. They have montages with music in them, but there's no point. Are they breaking out in music and song? Hercules has that. It's a more traditional Disney film. But I do agree with Benny. Like, it gives a little more freedom to be creative and get a little bit, maybe add a little bit more humor. I feel like those movies have more humor than some of these films that we've been talking about. Emperor's New Groove. I love Emperor's New Groove. I don't know if they'll ever do a live action of that, but I can't imagine anybody but David Spade voicing, the llama. And John Goodman was great. Like, the problem is these movies are so well cast from the earlier films. We'll get into Little Mermaid, but like, some of these characters just didn't sound right to me when I think of the characters, because I already have an attachment to the voices from the originals. And I don't know why they keep going after all these celebrities to do these voices. They're animated. We're not seeing you. I don't care if Scarlett Johansson was a snake in Jungle Book. Like, I'd rather you just get really good, talented voice actors. I don't need these celebrities that fill up, a poster. I don't need 10 names saying so-and-so is this, so-and-so is this. It's like, you know what? They're good actors, I'm sure. But sometimes just get a great voice actor. We don't need, so-and-so playing so-and-so because you want his name on a poster.
I think we can all agree, though, that the greatest Disney remake casting so far is Christopher Walken as King Louie.
That was a good one. Yeah.
Come on. He's walking here.
Yeah. Well, at least they leaned into him being walking, But, if you watch the original Jungle Book, like, I could have saw Jack Black as, the voice of King Louie. It would be a totally different energy, but I could see it.
That's a total different musical montage with Jack Black as King Louie, too. But I do enjoy these remakes. I enjoyed Aladdin for what it was. I mean, sometimes going into these and, Aladdin was my favorite animated movie or Disney animated movie. I actually have never seen the animated Hercules. So hearing that this is Benny's favorite, I think I'll give that a watch tonight. Benny and I are either completely on the same page with each other when it comes to movies or completely polar opposites. So now I want to see Hercules. I know the a lot of these movies I know the songs. Like, if you played a song from the Hercules movie, like Go the Distance, I would know that. I'd be able to be like, oh yeah, okay, that's from the animated Hercules. But I do think these movies are fun. I actually like the stunt casting with bringing in stars to kind of voice some of these roles, because it's fun to sit back and pick them out as they come on board. And I'll bring up my next point when we talk about the spoiler for the Little Mermaids. But here's one that just was announced, and I'm super curious your guys' thoughts. For me, it seems a little too soon, but it's already been announced that Moana is going to have a live action remake. And of course, The Rock is going to be playing Maui. This movie still feels recent to me.
So recent.
Is it too soon, guys?
Yes, it's too soon. What are we doing here? I at least understand reaching back to your 90s, 80s classics, but now we're going to remake movies from a few years ago. That movie was just created as an animated film for Disney. Who is yelling for a remake of this so soon? I just don't understand it. It feels completely motivated by money, in my opinion. What do you think, Betty?
It is absolutely motivated for money.
Yeah.
Like, Moana, I know it was a big hit when it came out, but I think the danger for them is like these other movies, they have a very strong built-in fan base. Like, you know, The Little Mermaid, $117 million worth of built-in fan base came out, you know, last week. Moana, even though it was a very well-received film, it's not had long enough to permeate, you know, in people's souls and become a part of their childhood or their life. I don't know if it's going to have that built-in nostalgia, and the Rock has not been drawing like he's used to. So I'm really interested to see how that does when it comes out.
How much of the Rock's influence pushed this movie into becoming a live action remake? I mean, do you think?
I don't think he had. I think Disney said, "You want to make some more money? let's do a live action Moana." Like, I don't see him bound, you know, knocking on the doors. I need to make a Moana movie. I need to make one movie. Maybe his career has gotten that bad, but I would like to think it hasn't gotten to that point. I think Disney is just like, was it a hit? Let's make it a hit again. That's all they care about. And of course, The Rock's going to do it. He's like, why not? I thought Moana is one of the better Disney films of the past decade. Like, they've been up and down. I think Moana was their last like truly great animated film, and I can't believe they're just already reaching back to remake it this quickly. It just feels it feels like a money grab.
Well, I'm curious, like, why don't they just go the Moana 2 route? It seems like a safer way to make money and keep the franchise from embarrassing itself.
I agree 100% with that statement, Benny. 100%. I mean, Frozen 2 came out and was another billion-dollar movie. And the quality of the movie was still great. And I think that you've got enough content with Moana. I mean, at the end of the movie, their whole tribe becomes, you know, sea travelers and explorers. And there's so much that you can do with that concept that your whole tribe is now an explorer. So it's not an individual like journey. It's a whole tribe's journey. And yeah, how Maui can come back into it. But yeah, I agree. It feels way too soon to be introducing a live action Moana. But hey, to your point, JTE, Disney's cashing checks, snapping necks. That's what they do. Any other thoughts, guys, before we move on to our review of The Little Mermaid? Any other Disney live-action remakes you guys want to talk about?
Not for me. I'm ready to break into The Little Mermaid. Let's crack this crab shell open and eat the meat.
Has either of you seen the Dumbo live-action remake?
Yeah, the Tim Burton one? Yeah, God, yes. I forgot all about that one. Yeah, okay. It was okay.
I have not seen it because I've just heard horrible, horrible things about it, but I'd be curious your guys' take on it.
I didn't think it was horrible. I thought it was okay. Michael Keaton's in there. You got him teaming back up with Tim Burton. I thought it was okay. And, you know, it's definitely not one of the worst ones. I think it's better than I did not see the Pinocchio because I just heard horror stories. And it makes me sad because you got Robert Zemeckis and you got Tom Hanks. And yeah, I heard it was just unwatchable. So I never even gave it a shot. I was just watching Del Toro's Pinocchio was so damn good. I didn't want to sour the taste after how great that movie was. So, yeah, no. For me, Pinocchio, I'll probably never watch. And Dumbo, not bad. Tim Burton at least put a stamp on it. And that's one thing I do like. And you like Aladdin and Guy Ritchie puts a stamp on that movie a little bit. And that's what I appreciate when I see a director's stamp put onto the film a little bit.
I did not finish the new Dumbo. To be honest with you, I watched the first half an hour, then I checked out of that bad boy. But also, I am not, you know, post 90s, I'm not a big Tim Burton fan. So, you know, I don't like the original Dumbo either. I find like the story fairly depressing for the most part.
Yes.
So between like depression subject matter, a director that I'm not huge with, I saw like after 30 minutes, like, yes, this is not for me. So I bailed.
Yeah, and Tim Burton double dipped. He also did Alice in Wonderland, which I did not enjoy.
And no, Alice Through the Looking Glass, which was even worse.
Yeah, that was awful.
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with Tim Burton. There are some of his movies that I absolutely think are brilliant, and I could rewatch over and over and over. And then there's other ones like Alice in Wonderland or Alice Through the Looking Glass, where I'm just like, no thanks.
Paycheck. It's a paycheck.
Paycheck, exactly. I mean, Alice in Wonderland was the first Disney remake to make $1 billion. So I think at that point in time, Disney took the shackles off of Tim Burton and was like, what do you want? And then after Dumbo came out and lost the money, they're like, all right, Tim, we're good. You're back to television there, pal. Well, folks, we are going to take another commercial break, and then we are going to move into our spoiler-heavy review of The Little Mermaid.
Now you can own Batman and Robin on video.
I got you!
No, I got you.
It's the one date you won't want to miss.
Cool party.
Own it on video.
Soundtrack available on Warner Sunset Records. Rated PG-13.
The electronic game with the talking phone. To win, call guys, get clues, figure out which guy really likes you.
He's not wearing a hat.
Bye, guys. What'd he say?
My secret.
Ah.
You.
He's not at the beach.
See you later. Guys.
It's Dan. Dan's my man.
You're right. I really like you.
Yes.
Dream Phone, the hot electronic talking phone game.
It's for you.
And we are back from our sponsors. And we're going to go straight into spoilers, but come on, you've all seen the original, so how much are we going to spoil for you? But we are going to go into our reviews of Disney's newest remake, The Little Mermaid. I'm going to kick off with you, Benny. Tell me about your experience with this movie. I mean, did you see this movie as a kid? And then obviously lead us into your review of this iteration of The Little Mermaid.
So as a kid, my parents did not limit what I watched in any way. So like,
same.
Yeah. So as a kid, like I grew up with Porky's and Major League. Those are the things that I'm connected to nostalgic. So I had no feelings whatsoever on The Little Mermaid. Like I enjoy the cartoon, but so when I go into this, I had no nostalgia involved, but I gotta say I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a cute fantasy rom-com. So I think overall, I am not a fan of the character design that they used for the animals in the film. I think they missed heavily with that. But I thought Haley Bailey was really good. Her voice is wonderful. I kind of like the way that they added new songs in to compensate for her not speaking during the movie. So I thought that was an interesting way to go with it. I don't remember the name of the gentleman that played the prince, and he was fine. He wasn't like, you know, jumping off the screen with charisma, but I thought they were okay together. The movie itself, though, it felt kind of boxed in. It felt like they filmed the whole thing on like one road and in like two rooms and on one beach. So it made the movie seem low budget, even though it's not a low budget movie, just because it seemed like it was all shot in these little four staging areas. And that's something you would usually see with like a lower budget movie. So on the positive, I think I think the chemistry between them was fine. I think the love story still holds up as you go through, and I like the way that they added into it. And as someone who is avidly not a Melissa McCarthy fan, I thought she did a very solid job as Ursula. She did not go into the Melissa McCarthy slapstick zone, which I do not enjoy. She actually acted, and when she does that, she's a really good actress. You know, so I thought she did a really solid job as Ursula. But my one negative takeaway is the character design on the CGI characters was not good. Sebastian has almost as much screen time as Ariel in this movie. And the way that they designed him, he has no face. You can't You can't see him interacting with anything. You can't see his emotions. You can't see him singing. And so I would say that this movie is like a solid 2.5 out of 5 because, you know, the chemistry is good. The story holds up. But so much of the movie is focused on these characters that are just designed not to make you connect with them. It is hard to get past that, for me anyway, to make it like a 3 or a 4 out of 5.
How about you, JT? What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, man. You know, at the end of the day, it just feels like a lesser counterpart to the movie that I grew up watching. Nothing in this movie, if you're going to do a remake, you got to either, one, do something, you know, vastly different, but within the structure of the storytelling, do something very different. I don't feel like this movie really did anything very different. And if you're going to try to remake it and still basically do a paint by numbers, do something to make it more lively, beautiful, cinematic. The underwater stuff didn't feel like they were really underwater to me. It felt like all CGI. The original film, when I think of it, I just think of the color palette. It's so bright and colorful. Like the Under the Sea song, you watch it on YouTube and it's just all these great animation of colors and motion. When they sang Under the Sea in this movie, everything felt so drab and like they were handcuffed by reality because they have to make it look somewhat realistic. And I think out of all the movies that Disney has remade, not saying this is the worst because I don't think it is. I actually think it's decent, but it just had the hardest time of translating the animated version to the live action. I think Beauty and the Beast did a good job with it, with like, you know, the candlesticks and all them coming alive. Like those are real objects that you just had to like animate. It's different when you can't put expression on a crab's face. It's different when you have a fish. They look weird. Fishes are weird just in everyday life. So when you put them in a movie and they're talking and they're all flying around, it doesn't match. You know what? That's not even true. I have watched Planet Earth and I have watched these documentaries and it looks so beautiful and like captivating. But at no point did I feel like that kind of magic while watching this movie. Like I think Planet Earth and some of these documentaries where they go deep sea diving have more beautiful imagery than this movie had. It felt very muted to me, the color palette. I feel like, you know, you're under the sea. Where were the castles? Remember the penis castles on the original poster? There wasn't even a castle underneath there. All they met at like some, you know, rock, surrounded by rocks. Like, go Aquaman. Give me a whole kingdom underneath there. It felt like they really could have done a lot more to make this feel like a more fantastical kind of film. And I just feel like they just kind of did the basics. It felt like a very basic by the numbers remake where they could have really, I feel like, expanded the world, expanded like the visuals in a lot of different ways. And I just feel like they didn't do that. It felt kind of lazy to me in some ways.
Moose, do you know what the budget of The Little Mermaid was?
$250 million.
Okay. So, I mean, it's an expensive film.
It is.
And to JTE's point is like the movie felt small and the CGI did not feel like you spent $250 million making this remake. And I think that goes to the people that designed it. Like, for example, this is a fantasy movie. Mermaids don't exist. None of this stuff exists. This island doesn't exist. You don't have to use a real crab. You don't have to use a real flounder. You can get outlandish with them and make the audience connect with them. There can be a castle under the sea. They don't have to live in actual coral. So it's like they held on to these like few realistic elements in a world that is in no way based in realism, to the detriment of the overall scope and visuals of the film.
Finding Nemo, I can watch scenes from that movie and it feels like you're underwater. There's debris in the water.
100%, yeah.
There's texture in the water. And I had a hard time kind of explaining this to my wife when we were coming out of it, that the graphics in Finding Nemo exist, right? Disney set the template for how to be able to make underwater life look crisp. And the CGI in The Little Mermaid did not look crisp. There's like a scene when they're first introducing King Trident, right? And he comes out and he's got all these little minnows around him. And he has like a cape of minnows. And it's so distracting because it just doesn't look good. And to your guys' point, like I understand that you're trying to make it seem like the underwater life is maybe a little more grounded in reality, but it's a reality where there's a talking crab and a talking bird and a fish. Like, this reality doesn't exist in a grounded reality, right? This is a fantasy world here.
Can I just say, like, the funny thing, when you say that, I don't know what they could have done, because you can't just make Sebastian look more animated, because then it wouldn't fit in with this real world version of the movie, which to me, it comes back to, this movie just doesn't translate to live action like the other films do. It was made to be an animated film. It was for these fish and these characters to have, like, the scene. One of my favorite songs in the movie is Kiss the Girl. And I love that sequence in the original film. And when I watched it in this film, I didn't feel the same, like, romance and beautiness that the original shows you with, like, the fireflies and everything. It felt, even though it's live action, it felt more artificial to me than it did in the original animated film. And that's why I think something is just lost in translation. Not every one of these movies should be translated to a live action. I understand some other ones. Even Aladdin, like, Guy Ritchie has some really nice set pieces. Yeah. And you could see the production where they first enter the castle. There's all these extras doing dance numbers. Like, I'm like, okay, you know what? They actually shot, like, a really impressive, you know, epic scale kind of sequence for this. And I never felt like that in this film, where I was like, oh, it felt all CG. Even the Ursula scene at the ending, it felt like a PS3 version of Ursula came out of that water. It didn't feel like Melissa McCarthy. Like, there's probably better ways to have done it where it's actually her and not a CGI creation. Like, film her doing something, make the head as humanly looking as possible. But at the end of this movie, it felt like a CGI creation came out of that ocean. At no point did it feel like a giant Melissa McCarthy to me. Like, and I think they used the nighttime and the shadows to kind of hide some of the CGI, but it still, in my opinion, looked really bad. And it wasn't as frightening as the original in any way.
Yep, I agree. However, I will say that I do think Melissa McCarthy, her performance as Ursula is awesome. Now, aside from Betty, I do like Melissa McCarthy. I do think that she has good comedic beats, but not in everything. I mean, some of her movies are just awful. But, like, movies like The Heat or Bridesmaids, like, she plays those characters perfectly. But she's also a terrific actress. And I like that they said, okay, like, the character choice that she had was a little more straightforward to Ursula. Like, she has to be a sea witch. She doesn't need to be the comic relief of the movie. And so, yeah, I praise Melissa McCarthy for her role as Ursula. I really enjoyed Halle Bailey as Ariel. And to your point, Benny, man, that girl can sing. There was the sequence of Under the Sea. And Under the Sea, for me, is, like, one of the best. It's up there with, like, Friend Like Me. You know, there's those, like, classic animated sequences with classic Disney animated songs. Under the Sea just was not good. The music was fine and the vocals were fine. However, it felt like there was, like, star wipes happening on screen.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, it looked like an old Windows screensaver while they played the song.
Yes. That's exactly what it was. And it wasn't even star wipes of, like, featuring Sebastian and Ariel. It was just star wipes of different fish. It didn't seem right for what could have been. I mean, in the original, the energy was sucked out.
It felt muted. It felt like you know, when you go to, like, a really bad high school play of a classic film, and it's like, oh, yeah, they're trying their best to, like, do this song that we all know and love, but at the end of the day, it just felt kind of amateurish and uninspired. Yeah, the energy was not there. I love all the music in this movie. And every time one of my greatest hits came on, it felt like a slog to get through sometimes.
And I mean, at the end of Under the Sea, I mean, you understand why Ariel is gone by the end of the performance. She's just like, oh, there was one fun part and now I'm gone. Like, that's exactly it. There was very like lack of energy in eternally great Disney animated songs. So overall, I mean, I'm kind of along with Benny. I'm about halfway to 5 points. Like, I'm maybe 2.5 stars out of 5 stars on this one. I thought Javier Bardem was completely wasted as King Trident, and I am a Javier Bardem fan. I think he had one good scene in the movie, and that was at the very end when he finally has some sort of like emotional connection with Ariel. The whole time he's supposedly worried about her and keeping her safe, but there's zero emotional connection between Ariel and him. It just seems like they dislike each other throughout the entire movie. That was wasted casting. The one like major like highlight for me throughout the movie was that this movie in this context is set in the Caribbean, right? And they go to like the Caribbean villages and it's very like inspired by Caribbean culture. And so you can understand why Sebastian has a Jamaican accent. And so I liked that take of it. And it's not just white people living in the Caribbean. It's you have the whole Caribbean culture like on display. When they go to the village, that was kind of a newer scene, not from the movies. They're like little dance sequences. They're like dancing to the Caribbean music. I thought that was so much fun. And then you go straight into the cookie cutter, like scene by scene by scene from the original movie. So kudos to Disney for like giving some context that, oh, okay, this world takes place in the Caribbean. I like that. I love it. I love that you decided to go like culturally appropriate for this movie. That being said, the movie's fine. It is very much lacking energy. I think Melissa McCarthy and Halle Bailey are the two big standouts of this. Sure, it was fun hearing Awkwafina rap, you know, as Scuttle.
No.
that song was so annoying.
Come on. I was like, what are you doing right now? Just because you have Awkwafina in your movie and she raps doesn't mean you have to give her a little rap song. So cringy. I hated that scene. I hated the song. I was just the whole time, please stop. End this right now. I'm like one more point. Like Benny said earlier, was it Prince Eric? Is that the prince in this one?
Yeah.
He had zero to little charisma. I feel like he did not bring much to the role. I don't think he's horrible. I just think he's kind of a blank slate. It's like an avatar. He's there. He's doing exactly what he's supposed to do, but he brought nothing extra to it. And Halle Berry. That would be different. That's a 90s remake. Is it Halle Berry?
Halle Bailey.
I just think obviously she knows the music stuff, right? I thought she killed her music performances, but for me, the jury's still out on whether she's a great actress because once she's on land, she loses her voice for most of the movie. So I don't know. I thought she did okay, but to me, it's like I need to see her do something a little bit different where she could actually express a little bit more and act a little bit more. I thought she got the job done and I thought she killed the singing, but I'm not ready to be like, oh my God, the next big star is here. I need to see more from her. I thought this movie was just kind of like, it's not a phone in, but there really wasn't much she could do to mess it up as long as she could hit the high notes.
There is a pretty substantial rumor out there that she will be playing Storm in Deadpool 3.
Really?
She has been cast in Deadpool 3, so we might get to see a little more acting chops out of her.
Okay. Again, I just like a lot of people are praising her, and I think she's really good in a movie, but like she loses her voice for half the movie and she sings really well. And I just feel like this movie didn't give her a chance to really spread out those acting muscles like I was hoping. And maybe because also there's no surprises for me because I knew everything that was going to happen. And the whole voice thing in this one, you know, losing the voice, I don't know. I'm just going to stand by. You guys kind of gave your ratings. I guess if I'm doing a 0 out of 5, I'd give it a 2.2 out of 5. Like it's passable, but it's just hard because you cannot not compare these to the originals because they are in a direct remake. And I think they just chose the wrong movie. They had to do it. I get why they had to do it. It's a $1 billion check sitting in the counter. You're going to cash it.
Yeah.
But I just think maybe under a different director, I'm not a huge Rob Marshall fan, honestly, overall. So I think maybe under a different director with a better vision, this could have been a better movie. I think it felt kind of lazy and it felt kind of uninspired. And the energy felt off for most of the music numbers for me. So overall, it just feels like a missed opportunity to what could have been a better remake. I don't know who could have directed it. I'm not saying who should have. I would just think Rob Marshall maybe wasn't the best guy for the job.
I would say that, you know, since this is the actual, not the Disney Little Mermaid, but the Little Mermaid story itself is in the public domain, I would like to see somebody take a shot at this story with a very dark sort of tint, you know, with the sea witch and the Little Mermaid. I think taking the story as a whole and like a very almost horror direction, I think you could do something really interesting if you could get the visuals right.
Yeah. Well, what's her name? Ellie Fanning was attached, I think, with Sofia Coppola at one point to make a version of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then after Elle Fanning fell out, it was Chloe Grace Moretz. They were supposed to be doing Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid. Sofia Coppola was supposed to be directing that.
Now that would have been interesting.
Yeah, because it's you're taking this old tale and putting a new spin, making it darker. These movies are not, you know, like you said, Betty, these are based on classic stories centuries old, but they're not making those movies. They're making remakes of the 90s films. Mm-hmm. And that's their only goal, really. And unfortunately, they need to think a little outside. I think they need to look a little more outside the box and start getting a little more creative and daring with their choices. Because, I mean, I say that, but this movie is going to make a bunch of money. So I guess, you know, maybe. Disney just wants to get the money, they're doing it. But Disney, you're also rich enough to where you could take some chances.
Yeah, I think it comes down sometimes to, yes, they're going to make the movie, but do they want to make a great movie or do they want to make a beat-by-beat movie? And the last few remakes have felt very beat-by-beat. Overall, like I said, I enjoyed it. The nostalgia definitely played a huge part into it. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, like I could call out scene by scene what was going to happen next. And I understand that this is a live action remake of a beloved animated tale, but Disney, take some chances, man. Make it a little darker, make it a little different. But overall, I'll stick with my standouts. I think for me, Melissa McCarthy definitely made the movie as Ursula. So we'll move into our final thoughts, gentlemen. Benny, I'm going to start with you.
I would say that this is it's a cute love story that you knew growing in. If you go in with no emotional attachment to the original like I had, it is an okay movie. It's not something you're going to remember a month from now. It's not something you're going to go and buy and throw on your shelf the day it comes out on Blu-ray. But it's a good movie. It's worth seeing in the theater. But in the end, I think if you're somebody that gets really irked when the original is not just like the original, skip it, because it's not going to add enough to it to, you know, make you love it. It's just going to annoy you. So like I said, if you're going in blank, it's a fine, forgettable day at the movies where you can eat some popcorn, you know, with your family, enjoy it. But if you're holding on to every beat by that original, if it's sacred to you, don't go watch it.
JT, your final thoughts.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it feels more like a product than a piece of filmmaking to me. And that's how I kind of felt about, you know, like a lot of these movies. Unless there was I don't think there's a single performances movie where I'm like, okay, go see this movie because of this performance. Because I feel like while her singing is great, she doesn't do anything that much different than the original character. There's no Luke Evans in this movie. There's no actor who's elevating it. I think Melissa McCarthy is basically doing an impression in a lot of ways of the original Ursula, which I totally understand why she does that. The look is there. You know, I think she looks really cool in this and menacing. I like her eels. But at the end of the day, I don't feel like she brought enough of her humor to the role. I didn't feel like she made it her own. It felt like she was just doing a imitation of the original character and adding a tiny bit of her Melissa McCarthy-isms to it, but not enough for me to be like, oh, Melissa McCarthy really took that role over. It just feels like a carbon copy of the original, but in a lesser way. The energy's not there. The cinematography's not there. I just don't think there's any reason I would ever tell anybody to watch this version over the original. And if you're going to remake these movies, you got to give me something to latch on to. So at least while I'm done, after I'm watching the original classic, there has to be something for me to come back, be like, oh, you know what? I wouldn't mind checking out the live action remake because of this. But there's nothing in this movie that makes me feel like I'm going to come back and revisit it, to be honest with you. Unlike Luke Evans or Cruella, those movies are doing something different with great performances. And I don't think there's anything in this that really, if I want to watch Halle sing, I'll jump on YouTube and watch her just do that one sequence. This movie doesn't bring enough new to the table or enough energy to make it a companion piece to the original, in my opinion. So while it's going to make its money, again, I agree with Benny. If you have no attachment to the original, I can't divorce myself off that because I just grew up with it. I have two younger sisters. They watch that thing on loop for years. So like it's in part of my DNA. I just know that movie from front to back. And now thinking about it, this movie, the one thing I was looking forward to in this film was my favorite sequence from the original film where Sebastian is trying to escape the chef after he kills all these fish. That sequence in the original is hysterical. It's frightening. It's gruesome. Like, I love that sequence because it was a great comedic scene, and it was like, you see all these fish getting cooked, and maybe it was too dark. Maybe Disney was like, you know what? That's just too dark for what we're doing in this film. But that at least was a sequence I was like so excited to see how they were going to pull that off. Instead, they just took the chicken route and didn't even attempt it. So that's another negative for me. So at the end of the day, a lesser movie.
Well, folks, we thank you for joining us for episode 2 of Extra Movie Butter Podcast. We will be bringing these podcasts to you weekly, so please tune in. You can catch us on Spotify. You can catch us on iTunes. Leave a great review for us. We would love it. We would give you a shout-out if you did. But on behalf of the always legendary JT, on behalf of the American icon Benny, I am Mark the Moose Haas saying, please let us be part of your world.
Hi, everybody.
Hakuna Matata.
Wrong movie, but we'll take it. Good night.